Hey guys, it's Kayla.
It's Katie.
And you're listening to Murder,
Mayhem,
and Merlot.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm not great today.
She really isn't.
It's not been a good day.
Oh. You want to divulge?
I mean, so as I was getting into bed last night, I impaled my big toe on a shard of glass, and it's just been downhill from there. So
happy for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not been great. I've been limping all day. I
just looks like a little hop along.
Yeah, a little hop along, and I've just been in pain.
You got some little antibiotics, though, some little steri strips.
I did. I actually waited too long to get, because it actually did need to be sutured, but I waited too long, because I thought, I got this, and,
she did this at, like, 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah. And I just didn't want to go to the ER for that, you know?
I had a text message that I woke up to this morning from 1:21 a.m. She was like, not me stepping on a shard of glass and cutting my toe wide open. I think I need stitches. That was it. Just dropped that and then...
Yeah.
Went to bed.
I got the bleeding to stop and then, you know, I bandaged it up and...
Cleaned up the crime scene.
Yep. Because there was a crime scene. And just... Once I pulled that glass out, that's all she wrote. Is everywhere.
Which you should know better.
Yeah, yeah. And my husband, Mikey, he was like, that's a lot of blood.
You should not have pulled it out.
Okay, but like, if I need to clean it, and what was I supposed to do? Leave it in there?
Go to the ER?
I wasn't going to go to the ER. I just said that. So, there you go. Well, speaking of crime scenes, what you got for us today, Katie?
I have the story of Dorothy Jane Scott. Familiar, not familiar, ringing any bells?
It rings a couple.
Crime Junkie did cover this a long
yes,
time
okay,
ago.
Yes, okay, yes, okay, that's why.
It was actually like they did two cases in one episode, and she was the first one that they did in the episode.
Okay, that's why it sounds vaguely familiar to me. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you anything, but the name sounds familiar.
I also, this past week, I introduced Jackie to the...
Jackie's her cousin.
Yeah. To the Ken and Barbie murders.
Oh, wow.
She had never heard of them before, and they have like a 4-episode docuseries on Max.
Mm-hmm.
So she was introduced to them, and I was like, yeah, they're a real fucked up pair.
Yeah. Speaking of true crime, I mean, really, and this is just a little sidebar here. Have you watched the Nickelodeon documentary?
I have. I did. I watched it on at the beginning of this week.
Yeah. And I was one of those kids. I mean, I watched all of those shows. Yeah. I'm a 90s kid. I watched all of those shows. And I was like yelling at the TV by the time it was over. Mm-hmm. I was so angry. I'm still so angry.
It's rumored that Max, I don't know how like for sure like this is, mm-hmm. but it's been buzzing around the internet. Just today is the first time that I've seen it, that there's going to be a 5th episode that mm-hmm. they're going to put up of just like private interviews with Drake Bell.
Oh, I hadn't seen that.
And unseen stuff. I've only seen like 2 things about it today. Like I said, I don't know how true that is.
Yeah.
But just it's a possibility.
Yeah. Interesting. But yeah, if you haven't watched that documentary, it's on Max, which used to be HBO Max.
Yeah.
It's
fucked.
Yeah. There's just no words really for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the monster who, speaking of true crime news, who left her 16-month-old baby alone for 10 days.
Oh, yeah, that's had us reeling. I mean, just...
Yeah, she was sentenced.
Yeah.
And,
That, I've cried over that. I've
the video from the Ring camera footage at, like, 1:20 or 1:40 in the morning, where mm-hmm. you can hear...
Her screaming. Oh, God.
But, if anybody, any woman in prison, you know, it's worth a little 1-2 special. I mean, I will put some money on your tab.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
I'm like, you know that those, they're going to have to, like, watch her.
Isolate because her. Yeah.
The other, which I'm like, cool. Give her no clothes, no food, no toilet, no nothing. And just let her sit in there.
Oh, yeah.
All by herself.
Yeah.
And I think it was you that said, play that scream over speakers super loud on repeat 24/7. And I think that would be the closest thing to justice that there could be.
I know. Oh, I can't talk about it hardly anymore. I'll start crying again.
But yeah, those moms in prison are about to bop, 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 bop. And I am fully supporting you.
Yeah. We've said this before on this show. We support women's rights and their wrongs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Katie.
Okay.
Go into your episode after we've talked about other
crime news.
Yeah.
Dorothy Scott was a 32-year-old single mother working as a secretary at two jointly owned stores. One was called the Swinger Sock Shop, which they sold, like, lava lamps and stuff. Stuff that you'd, you know, stare at while you were tripping, you know?
Got you.
And they also owned Custom John's Head Shop in Anaheim. I don't know what a head shop is.
Yeah, I was like, what in the cousin fucking hell is that?
Well, this is actually in California. They're out of cousin fucking territory. We live in cousin fucking territory.
Touche.
But they're pretty far out.
Yeah.
Just a few miles from her home in Stanton, California. Dorothy had a 4-year-old son named Sean. Her parents primarily helped her with her son because the child's father did not live close by. Sean would spend the days with his grandparents, Vera and Jacob, while Dorothy worked during the day. And she worked, like, at both places. She would just kind of do secretary and paperwork and things like that at both. She didn't really, like, interact with people.
Hmm.
When Dorothy was not working, she was either at home with her son or at church or a church function. Dorothy was a homebody through and through. She lived a normal and pretty quiet life. She had never partied, she did not drink, and she had never done drugs. Dorothy just lived to be a mother and devote her life to God. Dorothy's easygoing life would come to a horrifying end in May of 1980 and has left everyone with questions about what happened for decades. Really forever, because this is unsolved. There was an employee meeting at her job on May 28th, 1980. I was not able to find which shop had a meeting. I don't know if because they're jointly owned, maybe it was just one big meeting.
Big possibility, yeah.
Yeah. After the meeting was over, one of Dorothy's coworkers noticed they had a raised bump on their arm and they had also not been feeling well throughout the meeting. Dorothy, being the caring woman that she was, offered to take her coworker to the UCI Irvine Medical Center in Orange County, which was about 20 minutes from Dorothy's home. One of the other employees, Pam Head, said that she would tag along. At about 9 p.m., Dorothy and her two colleagues left work and quickly stopped by her parents' house to check on Sean and let her parents know she would be late getting Sean because she was taking her coworker to the ER. While Dorothy was there, she swapped out her black scarf for a red one that was thicker and warmer. After the three of them arrived at the ER and were taken to a room for examination, it was discovered that Dorothy's coworker, whose name was Conrad, I think his last name's Bostrin, had been bitten by a black widow spider.
Oh yeah, that'll mess you up.
They can kill you.
No, they can.
If absolutely. It goes untreated.
I've known people to lose limbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
so I imagine like them thinking back and they're like, she really stopped to like swap scarves.
Yeah.
I mean they had no clue.
Right. Like,
they
had no idea. Yeah.
But she was also checking on her 4-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, the two women had gotten him there early enough where he could be treated with medication. The doctor wrote Conrad a prescription, and he was discharged at 11 p.m. Dorothy said that she would go get the car and pull it up to the front to pick up Pam and Conrad, because she knew that Conrad was not still feeling great, and she didn't want him to like have to walk through the whole parking lot.
Yeah.
After a couple of minutes of Pam and Conrad waiting for Dorothy inside of the door, Pam decided to take a look in the parking lot to see what was taking so long and if everything was okay. Conrad followed Pam outside, and as the two reached the sidewalk just outside the exit door, Dorothy's white station wagon sped towards them with the bright lights on. The two viciously waved their arms at the car to get Dorothy's attention, or at least they assumed it was Dorothy driving, but the car rushed past them and took a sharp right turn out of the parking lot and vanished. Pam and Conrad assumed that maybe something had happened with Sean or she was going to check on him, and they waited to hear from her, but after a few hours, they had not heard from Dorothy. Worried at this point, the two decided to go report Dorothy missing to the local police, which I'm like, good for you two. Because most people are like, you know, you would imagine that most people would just walk away, like just call someone else, get a different ride and go home, like thinking,
right,
maybe something did happen with her son and she had to go home. But they were like, some ain't right.
No. Yeah.
And the police did not, like, dismiss them, which was also...
That's good.
Great, especially for the 1980s, which shocked me.
Yeah, because now we're a little bit more apt to get into gear mm-hmm. when something like this happens and to investigate right then and there. And it actually still happens today, but not so often. But a lot of older cases, you'll hear, we'll give them 24 hours.
48 hours.
48 hours. Yeah. If you haven't heard from them, then we'll file the missing.
Yeah, like they won't even file the paperwork until then.
Right, and that's That's not true.
Yeah, it's not true. Like, you can force them to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So just keep that in mind. If you're ever told, let's wait 24 hours, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. File it then.
Yeah, because you can make them do it. There's no law that states that you have to wait
a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people think that, and you don't.
Yeah, and so you don't.
There's a little... tidbit of information for you.
There you go. The next morning at 4:30 a.m. on the 29th, Dorothy's 1973 Toyota station wagon was found abandoned and on fire in an alleyway about 10 miles from the hospital. After the discovery of Dorothy's car, police began investigating the case as an abduction because no sign of Dorothy was found.
Yeah, I was about to ask. I wonder if they went to the place where her car was parked and made sure that she wasn't...
Yeah, she wasn't.
Oh, I'm sure. But I'm just saying, like, you know, that would have been my first instinct is, like, she got maybe mugged or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to the place where her car was parked to make sure that didn't happen.
Yeah. There was no sign of her anywhere.
That's interesting.
One thing police would later find out was that Dorothy had been getting some terrifying phone calls from a mystery man. Dorothy believed that she knew the man's voice, but could never actually pinpoint who the caller was. Dorothy would get threatening phone calls from a man just about every day. During one of the phone calls, the man said, quote, "When I get you alone, I will cut you up into bits and no one will ever find you." He would go from that kind of threatening phone call to next professing his love for Dorothy. The man always told Dorothy that he was watching her at all times 24/7. One night he told her that he had left her a gift on the hood of her car and she had to look outside. When she looked outside, on the hood of her car lay a single dead rose. Vera, Dorothy's mother, said that her daughter was so scared that she started taking karate classes for self-defense the week before she went missing. Jacob, Dorothy's dad, had told investigators that his daughter did go on some dates occasionally, but that was not something that happened very often, and she did not have a steady boyfriend at the time or wasn't really going on any dates with anybody, so the thought that maybe this was like a scorned lover was not really...
Right, I think my mind automatically just goes to someone that she's close to. Not like close to, but an acquaintance. Like maybe at her church or, you know, someone she least expected.
Yeah. And they really only ever had one sort of suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Like they've had no one else besides like really one person.
Wow.
Yeah. The calls would continue after Dorothy had disappeared. The man had found a new victim to terrorize now that Dorothy was gone, and that was Dorothy's mother, Vera. Vera one day got a call from an unknown man. When she answered the phone, she heard a male voice say, quote, "Are you related to Dorothy Scott?" To which she replied yes, and the man said, quote, "Well, I've got her." Vera would receive a phone call just about every Wednesday when she was home alone. The male caller would explain details about her daughter, Dorothy, including what color her scarf was when she went missing. Police insisted that no one that knew about Dorothy's case go public with anything, because the male caller seemed to know details about the case that were not public, so the lack of public knowledge would be to the police's advantage. But this all came crumbling down when Jacob, Dorothy's father, went to the Orange County Register to tell them about his daughter's case. The article was published on June 12, 1980, and on that day, the mysterious man called the Register's phone. The man told him that he had murdered Dorothy because she was unfaithful to him. He said that he was in love with Dorothy and she had betrayed him and been with another man. He revealed things about the case that were not public knowledge, such as every detail about her clothes that she wore when she went missing from the hospital. He also knew the reason that she was at the hospital, and he talked about the coworker, Conrad, by name, and that he had been bitten by a black widow, which I'm like, sir, were you inside of the hospital?
Right. And really, I wouldn't have put it past him.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's stalking her, he's stalking her.
Yeah.
You know, so I bet he was like, right, like he was probably in that hospital with them, like right outside his door or something, mm-hmm. listening.
The man also told the register that Dorothy had called him from the hospital, but this was adamantly denied by Pam and Conrad, who said that Dorothy was with them all night until she went out to get the car. All of Dorothy's coworkers were vetted during the investigation. Police thought to look into frequent customers at Swingers, but Dorothy worked in the office, so she never really had face-to-face interaction with any customers. Now, a month later, police only had one single lead, and that was the mystery man making these phone calls. After several attempts to trace the calls, the police were always unsuccessful. The caller would hang up before the police could trace the location of the calls. And I mean, in the 1980s, they would have had to have like probably a few minutes.
Oh yeah.
To trace
longer,
phone calls.
Longer than a minute, I would say.
And he pretty much would like make these phone calls and then just like ask a fucked up question or like say some awful things and then just hang up the phone. The calls continued for 4 years to Vera.
4 years?
4 years.
4 years.
Almost every Wednesday. For 4 years.
To the mom.
To Dorothy's mother.
Okay, so not to the newspaper or whatever.
No. To her mother.
Oh.
About her missing child.
My God.
In the home that Dorothy's son is now living in.
That
like this little boy could have gone and answered the phone.
Yeah, no. I bet she was like,
Don't answer this. Yeah, they probably were like, don't ever answer the phone.
Yeah.
I would say that they had to because
bless his heart.
This fucking guy.
And bless her heart. Bless all like
I can't like your child's missing and then someone calls you once a week
and you know that's
to
them.
Torture you about it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait till I tell you what he asks.
But you know that's him and you're just like.
And there's nothing you can do because like I said, it's the 1980s. So for them to trace a phone call, he'd probably have to be on the line for a few minutes and he would just say some atrocious, awful shit then hang up.
The way I would lose my mind. God, that's awful.
Yeah. When the man would call, he would ask Vera, is Dorothy home?
That evil son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm. This takes a fucked up person.
Yeah. It really makes me think of the Golden State Killer. And I'll tell you why. And this happened in California too. But the Golden State Killer, he would call his victims and harass them, or the ones he didn't kill,
mm-hmm.
and then the ones he did kill, he would call and harass their families.
Mm-hmm.
So this makes me think, like, this hasn't got to be his first time. I mean, it just doesn't. That's just the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah, he would either call and ask that question, or he would just call to remind them that he had killed their daughter. He would just be like, "Hey, so just in case you forgot." From last Wednesday, I would like to tell you once again that I killed your child.
Yeah. And at that point, I'd be like, okay.
I took away your child and then I left her child motherless.
Yeah. Meet me outside. Like, you won't talk.
I'd be like, you're so big and bald. Step out.
Yeah. Step out. I'd be like, okay, we're done.
Because he watched their house because he always knew when Vera was alone.
Yeah. I'd be like, come on out. Come on. I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. Come on out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just me and you. Let's go.
Yeah.
After a certain while, man. Like, oh my God.
I know. I would snap. I don't know how Vera did not go insane.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, the caller only made the calls when Vera was alone, never when her husband Jacob was home with his wife. One day, the male caller would get a surprise. When he made his usual Wednesday call to Vera, he had actually called later in the afternoon and didn't realize that Jacob was home. So, Jacob answered the phone. And he told the caller that they had the wrong number. The mystery man immediately hung up the phone without saying anything and would not call the Scotts for 4 months. During the dry period from phone calls, a body was found on August 6th in 1984 on a remote construction site. A skull, a pelvis, an arm, and 2 thigh bones. They were all bones, by the way. They didn't find like an actual arm were found partially burned and partly covered in soil. They weren't, like, buried. It was literally like someone just kind of, like, scooted some over and then just left them there.
Okay.
But the bones were charred.
Okay.
There had been a fire on this site 2 years prior in October of 1982. So police knew that the body had been there at least that long. Which it's like, that's crazy. These people were coming to work on this construction site for those 2 years from 82 to 84 and never saw it.
Yeah. And you just think about how many times that could have happened. That could be you. You know?
I mean, they had no freaking clue.
No.
you know? Mm-mm. They very well could have just taken, like, any sort of large equipment and dug up right there or covered mm-hmm. it with concrete or something and never.
Well, a lot of bodies are found that way.
Yeah.
You know, so.
After the bones were tested and dental records were compared, it was confirmed that the remains belonged to Dorothy Jane Scott. But there was a strange discovery at the site of her remains. Some scattered on top and some next to Dorothy were dog bones. It has been rumored that the dog bones were a sign of the occult and helped lead to the one and only suspect they've ever had, at least publicly said that they had, named Mike Butler.
Why is that a sign of the occult, though?
It's the 1980s.
Right. The
Satanic Panic?
The Satanic Panic. Yes.
Yeah.
It was during the Satanic Panic.
Yeah.
Yep. You're right.
Police now believe that the dog bones were actually just to throw off the scent if any police dogs ever came through there.
That was my first thought.
That's what police believe. But yeah. A lot of people in the town rumor that it was a huge indicator that this Mike Butler, who was like, he was like a mechanic or something
mm-hmm.
at a nearby auto shop. But people said that because Mike Butler was known to have, quote, alternate religious beliefs.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So
of course he has to be.
Right. Butler would be later cleared by investigators due to the lack of evidence that pointed toward him. But some locals still believe that Mike Butler is to blame for the stalking, abduction, and murder of Dorothy.
Is there no other evidence other than he has different religious beliefs?
Not that they came out and said, but there was they had nothing that led towards him and they publicly came out and said he's been cleared.
Here's the thing, I'm all for getting, obviously I want people to have justice and you know, if someone did a horrible thing, they should be outed and brought to justice. But guys, if someone didn't do something, they didn't do it.
And you just want to blame them because they're different than
they're
you?
They're different. Yeah, it's so damaging and so, life-altering. If he didn't do this, just think of what you've done to his life.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another victim in just a shitty situation, right. You know? And if the police have come out and said, he didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know? So...
Which it's also rumored, I couldn't find. It was in a couple different sources that they said it, but some they didn't. So I'm just going to assume that it's a rumor that her son, Sean, still believes that it was Mike Butler. But again, I don't know how true that is because it was in some sources, but not in others.
Right.
So it was kind of like a toss-up.
Gotcha.
At the site of Dorothy's remains, investigators also found a turquoise ring that was identified later by Dorothy's mother, Vera, to be her daughter's ring and her watch. The watch had stopped at 12:32 a.m. May 29th, almost exactly an hour after Dorothy's car was seen by Pam and Conrad leaving the hospital. Police believe this to be her exact time of death, but whether or not the watch stopped on its own because of some sort of trauma, it got hit, got broken, or the murderer stopped it on purpose is still unknown.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they think that he killed her within an hour.
Yeah.
Of taking her, and that the watch stopped at her time of death, or at least very close to
it. Yeah, very close to it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild to me.
Mm-hmm. About a week after Dorothy's remains were found, the calls to the Scott home started back up again. The man would again call and ask if Dorothy was home, when Vera would answer the phone. The Scotts held a memorial on August 22nd, 1984, for their daughter Dorothy, and laid her to rest, surrounded by family and friends mourning the loss. Vera and Jacob would never know who murdered their daughter and tortured them over the phone for years, as Jacob Scott would pass in 1994 and Vera Scott passed in 2002. The unknown stalker and murderer who tortured Dorothy and then her parents has never been uncovered. Sean, who is around 48 now, grew up never knowing who did this to his mother or why. This insidious unknown man stole the life of Dorothy Scott and has never had to face what he did. It is likely the man may still be alive to this day. He would be older, possibly in his 70s or 80s. This man got to live his life, but Dorothy never did. And he has gotten away with it for 44 years.
I just...
Yeah.
Flabbergasted.
And, I mean, it's a short episode. It's a short story to tell mm-hmm. because the police have released the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
They've kept almost everything close to the chest.
Yeah.
But... I don't think anyone is actively looking into her case right now. I couldn't find any recent mm-hmm. updates. Nothing. It's likely in a box just sitting on the shelf.
Yeah. And that's so sad. Mm-hmm. And it just angers me that this guy tortured this family after doing this horrible thing and already ruining their lives.
There's also no known cause of death. They have no idea how he killed her.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that happens.
And it's because there was so little found. They don't even know where she was murdered.
Once you get down to bones and they've been there for a while, obviously it's harder unless there's like a hole or like from a gunshot wound. Yeah.
Never found the rest of her. They've never found the murder site. If they found anything in the car, they've never publicly released that.
Yeah.
But you got to remember the car was also on fire when it was found. Like, it got called in as like, hey, there's a car on fire in an alleyway. And then when they got there, they were able to look into it and see that it was her car, Dorothy's car.
Mm-hmm.
But if anything was ever found in the car, it's never been released. But with the whole car being on fire and still on fire when they got there, there probably wasn't a lot. Especially in the 1980s. I mean, they didn't have as many resources back then as we have now.
And so, like, now I'm wondering if they've tried to, if police have DNA that they're not talking about,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they found DNA in the car, if they were able to salvage any of it. I wonder if they could now test it with the advanced technology that we have. This is a very good time in justice. I mean, for getting justice, because of familial DNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're getting a lot of people because of familial DNA. They test it and they realize, oh, this is...
I mean, that's how they got the Golden State Killer.
That's how they got the Golden State Killer was because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And countless others. Like,
and it's likely that this man is doing the same as he was. He's just old and living his life now.
Yeah.
Could have been married, could have had kids, could have grandkids, crime, like he was.
Yeah, crime junkie, which we talk about crime junkie all the time, but crime junkie calls it the season of justice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what it is. Like, there's so much happening with the DNA these days. And, you know, I just think there's so many cases that could be solved if they just tested what they had. Now they may not have anything, you know, and that's a different story, but
because it also I couldn't find anywhere like how badly the car was burned up or anything. Like,
yeah,
like I said, I mean, I would say a good 98% of this case, the details about this case, they're not public knowledge. They're just not. They didn't even want the public to know that she was missing or that her car was even found. But her dad just kind of couldn't handle it, you know, and wanted people to know.
Mm-hmm.
But to be on the lookout for his child. And on one hand, you're like, I completely understand. And then on the other hand, you're like, you know, he goofed up. But it's, again, like that was his daughter and he wanted to get it out there and like have people mm-hmm. looking for her, even though the police were like, don't do that.
Right. Yeah.
So I would say a good chunk of this case, we just don't.
And he seems very professional.
It is too...
I'm telling you,
he was too good at what he did
for
this to be a first time.
I'm telling you, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he had other victims.
Yeah.
Just because it was way too... Like, the dog bones, I 100%, when you said that, my first thought was he did that to cover up.
See, yeah.
If they had bloodhounds out looking for her, that would have covered up her sentence in some ways, you know? So, yeah, I think...
I also think, like, the dump site was very deliberate.
Yes.
Of the body, because, first of all, he didn't take a lot of energy to try to hide where these bones were. Like, he did not bury them. He literally just, like, laid them down, put some dog bones on top, and then next to, like, the bones that he had discarded there.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because they've never found any other pieces of her, or, again, if they have, we don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So just the piece of her that he had there, and then just kind of like dusted like an inch of soil on top. Like, I feel like he was solely relying on this is going to get covered up by something at mm-hmm. this construction site and they're never going to find her. And that just did not work out in his favor.
Right.
And if they do come a looking, the dogs will smell the dog mm-hmm. bones.
Yeah.
And not.
And something, and I keep going back to the Golden State Killer, but the Golden State Killer called his victims or anybody that does that is because they are confident. They are so confident that they're not going to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And he was. That's why he harassed the family like he did. or harass her mom.
And he was an old man, too. I mean, he's up mm-hmm. in his age. So, I mean, and this guy would be, too, depending on how old he was
mm-hmm.
in 1980. Like, you know, he could be around his 70s or right. 80s now. Because he was likely around her age, they think.
Yeah.
If it was a guy that was, like, in love with her.
Oh, yeah, most likely.
Mm-hmm. You know, so he probably would have been around his 30s as well.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's a sad case.
It is. It very much is, and it angers me greatly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole watch thing, that gets to me. That part's
crazy.
That gets to me, yeah.
Like, did he stop it? Like, what if he stopped it? Because they also don't say, like, if it was hit at some point, like, she hit it on something, like, they don't say, like, it was broken or anything yeah. like that. They just say that they found her watch, not the state that it was in when they found it, just that they found it, and it was stopped on that day at that time, about an hour after she was last seen.
And you gotta be deranged and just, like,
I know. So
confident in yourself I'm like, to stop the watch like that. He said that
like it was an anniversary.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he literally said it as if it was like an anniversary thing
mm-hmm.
for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm going to remember 12:32 a.m. on the 29th, which mm-hmm. is fucked.
Yeah. Oh, damn. That's yeah. all I got to say.
Yeah. Well, rest in peace, Dorothy and yeah. her parents. Sean, I hope you're doing well.
And I hope you get justice. Mm-hmm. All right. Bye.
Bye.